Hey, well, good morning, Christ the King. I'm Pastor Bill McKinley, and I welcome you guys to worship. You know, it's interesting, as the rolling's going on behind me, I'm like, I never know what to do with myself when I'm standing up here waiting for the stop. And so I was like, wow, that's really a long time. And so, but I want to thank you guys for coming in today and this beautiful day to be able to worship God. And we're going to continue in our series on God's faithfulness. And today we're talking about how God's faithfulness meets us in our needs. And we all have different needs at different times in our lives. And sometimes they're financial, sometimes they're spiritual, emotional. Sometimes they have to do with food. Life is hard. And life is hard. And I want to share a little bit about myself. In 1988, when I was in college, kind of entering my first senior year, I had two senior years of college. Sometimes it takes some of us a little longer, yes. And it was 1988, and my mother, got diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, the progressive multiple sclerosis. And this was years before a lot of the drugs that they have now that helps with MS. And it was devastating news to me. And my dad was out of the picture, had been out of the picture for a long time since he was in seventh grade. He sort of kind of left. And it progressed so rapidly. For the first 2 years, she sort of lived at home. And then eventually my younger brother, I have a younger brother, 3 years younger, he and my mom moved to Seattle where her sister was and lived there for a while. But by the time I graduated from college, 2 years, we had to place my mom in a convalescent nursing home. And she, at the time, could not eat on her own, so she had to have a feeding tube. She could not talk. She had adult diapers on. And it was just this dark, dark time. And most of her days were spent watching TV and not being able to move or even to change the channel. And a hard thing with MS is it doesn't really affect your mind, and so she's locked and trapped in this body. And while my mom grew up in the church, and when we were younger, my parents took us to church, as elementary school kind of came along, we got busy, like a lot of people do with other things, and we sort of just kind of fell away because we didn't see the need for church or the need for Christ. You know, we made excuses. And when we had to put my mom in the convalescent hospital, I was the power of attorney. So at about 23, I was making all the choices for my mom's health and health care and finances. You know, and it's not like my mom did anything wrong. It wasn't like she was, you know, a bad person or an evil person. I mean, you know, she's a sinner. We're all sinners. But, you know, she did the best she could raising two sons. And she did a good job. And, you know, my mom was 5'10", and, you know, tall lady and stuff, but my brother and I still towered over her. I was 6'4", my younger brother 6'9", and we'd go after each other like brothers do, and my mom would lay down the law, but it was, now to see her the way she was, it just wrecked what little faith that I had in my life. And I lived in Southern California as a teacher at this time, and I would fly up to Seattle to see her as often as I could. And my aunt, her sister up there, would go visit her every Saturday. And when I'd visit her, after a while, when she lost the ability to talk, I oftentimes would just take a movie and plug that in, because as you're talking with someone who can't respond back, you sort of run out of things to say. My question at that time when I wasn't a Christian was why? I mean, I believed in sort of this ambiguous God that was out there. And I was angry at this sort of ambiguous God that I believed in, of why would this happen to me and my mom and our families. And honestly, it was the darkest point in my life. I realized I had nothing to stand on. You know, I would ask friends, and they didn't have answers, and they'd be like, oh, we're sorry, let's go out and go grab a drink or something. And it was like I was trying to stand on this world that was not providing any answers or reasons for me. And it was like the story that Jesus tells of where are you going to build your house on? Solid rock or sifting sand? And I had built a house on sifting sand. And as my mom got worse, it was just like everything was sifting and shifting around me in my life. I really realized I couldn't rely on humankind. Now, most of us, I think, if we live long enough, have been there at some point. Maybe not as much of a serious illness, but there's been stuff and struggles in our lives and needs in our lives. And it's pain, and we've asked where God is, if we believe in God even. Because we don't see his faithfulness. We bargain with God sometimes. If you do this, I'll do this. If you heal my mom, I said it, if you heal my mom, I will dedicate my life to you. You know, I don't know what that meant at the time, and I don't know if I really believed it. Of course, why? You know, maybe it's a death in the family that has you asking these things. You ask, where is God's faithfulness? Maybe you lost a job, or maybe it's you didn't make the sports team, or your parents are fighting, or you're alone, or, you know, you're fighting with your spouse, or you don't have enough food. We've all experienced a sense of hopelessness in our life, and we often wonder, how can God be in the midst of that? Pastor Craig said a couple weeks ago, amid our unfaithfulness, God is knocking and seeking, that he remains true amid our wandering, and that we need to be open to his voice. Even when the world is yelling, there is no God, like it was at me. We're going to look at Psalm 34, 15 through 20. Now, if you have your Bibles, you can open them up. It's going to be on the screen, but we're going to kind of walk through a part of this. Because oftentimes we lose touch with what is meaningful. And we don't see God's faithfulness. Just like I didn't know why my mom had feeding tubes in her now at the age of 49. This is what Psalm 34 says. The eyes of the Lord are towards the righteous and his ears towards their cry. The face of the Lord is against those who do evil, to cut off the memory of them from the earth. When the righteous cry for help, the Lord hears and delivers them out of all their troubles. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves the crushed in spirit. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers them out of them all. He keeps all his bones. Not one of them is broken. Verse 15 says this, the eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous and his ears toward their cry. Even when I was crying out to God about my mother, I was still trying to hold on to it, and I wanted to fix things myself because I kept thinking I'm under my own power. But the thing I didn't realize is from the moment I was baptized is that God's Holy Spirit was working miracles in my life and was calling me to him. I just was not hearing his voice because the world I was listening to, it was a lot louder than the whisper that he was going on in my life. And I cried out like generations and generations of men and women before me, where are you? Why aren't you here? I had blinders on, though, and I just saw what was right in front of me. But God was starting to hear my cry. Verse 17 and 18. When the righteous cry for help, the Lord hears and delivers them out of all their troubles. The Lord is near the brokenhearted and saves the crushed in spirit. It says he's going to deliver us, but I wasn't feeling that he delivered me the way I wanted to be delivered or the way my mom wanted to. But that's often how it is when we cry out to God for help, he's not delivering it, dang it, all the way we want him to. My hope was that my mom would get up out of the bed and walk and be healthy and lead a long life. But my trouble was I did not know the reconciling love of God in Jesus Christ. I did not know that God had everything in his hands at that time. He was trying to work and was working to make everything whole. Part of the trouble was I didn't have community surrounding me to lift me up and hold me. I had friends, but I didn't have these friends who were also Christians, who are feeding into me and who would be living alongside of me through the struggles of my life. There were times when I was so crushed. And I'm sure some of us have been there too. Verse 19 and 20 says this: "Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers him out of them. He keeps all his bones, not one of them will be broken." God doesn't promise a life free of afflictions and needs and wants and pains. You live beyond a couple years and you realize this. We live in a broken world. God didn't cause my mother's MS. The world is broken. And oftentimes we bring our needs and afflictions on ourselves by what we do or what we don't do. But even when these afflictions and pain are put on us, he promises to bring us out of them, these verses talk about. Not in our time or the way we want, but he will deliver us. We too often want it delivered our way, my time, the way I want it to. My mother was in this convalescent hospital. There's a Lutheran church a couple blocks away, and they would send people down to the convalescent hospital to visit her. And this is before I was a Christian. I was kind of frustrated. And I flew up from L.A. to Seattle to see my mom. And this is the only time in the 18 years she was in this convalescent hospital that I ran across this woman. And I'm going into the room almost. There's this woman there talking to my mom and praying with her. And I decide I'm going to step out of the room. And I hear this woman start praying for my mom. And she's praying not the prayer I wanted her to pray. She was praying a little bit for my mom to get better physically, get up and walk. But she spent 10 minutes praying for that my mom would know who Jesus is, that she would accept where she is, that she would find peace in the midst of this, that she would know Jesus so that my mom would be healed ultimately when she passed away. It's not the prayer I wanted. And I'm angry. And the woman comes out. I introduce myself. I'm internalizing this anger I have. I mean, I was a middle school teacher. I'd be angry a lot sometimes. I learned how to internalize really well. And I waited outside, and so she comes out, and I introduce myself, and she introduced herself, and I go, I don't mean to be, rude, but you hardly prayed for my mom to get better. And I had probably the most impactful 10-minute conversation with anyone in my life, with a woman I've never seen since. This woman shared about how important it was that my mom really didn't talk at this point, how my mom has come to be at peace with where she was, how she knew who Jesus Christ is. And even if my mom was healed instantaneously, got up and walked away and then did not know who Jesus is, when my mom died, she wouldn't be with God. And, damnation and all this stuff. And how God is more important than anything else. And he brings the ultimate healing in our lives. I wish I could repeat the whole 10-minute prayer and time I had with this woman. And she left. And it's probably the first time that I could physically feel the Holy Spirit. Because I had been crying out, but I had not been listening. And this woman, God's agent, worked through God to help me listen to what's really important, and that God was meeting my need and meeting my mother's need in the midst of this. And I'm tearing up, and I go inside the room, and my mom still has tears in her eyes, and she can't really talk. And But I learned that day what real healing meant and what God's faithfulness really meant in people's lives, that he meets us in our needs, not in our time, not in the way we want, but ultimately much more powerfully than we could ever imagine. Romans 8, 26 through 28 says this. Likewise, the Spirit helps us in our weakness, but we do not know what to pray for as we ought. But the Spirit himself intercedes for us with groaning too deep for words. And he who searches hearts knows what is the mind of the Spirit, because the Spirit intercedes for the saints according to the will of God. And we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose. It says the Spirit is there when we're crying out. Too often, we don't want to acknowledge it, and we try fixing things on our own, no matter what it is, where we're in need, if we're fighting with our spouse, if we didn't make the team, whatever it is, we try to fix it on our own. And I couldn't fix my mother. And I love this line in this passage. It says, when we don't know what to pray, the Spirit intercedes. So I did not know what to pray for. Oftentimes, we don't know what to pray for. Our lives are falling apart. There's struggles in our lives. We have these needs. It could be material, like food, or it could be spiritual, or it could be healing. And we just are at the point where I don't know what to do anymore. And the Spirit hears us. And he hears us. I prayed for years. Have you guys ever been there? In the struggles, we don't know what to do. We just cry out, and the Spirit of the Lord is there and meets us. He knows our hearts, whether our parents are sick or whether there's issues in our lives. He knows this. And God directs the Spirit to comfort us and to renew us, not according to our will, but to his will. The plans that God has for us, because it's his desires. Verse 27, and he who searches hearts knows what is in the mind of the Spirit, because the Spirit intercedes for the saints according to the will of God. It's God's will that he intercedes in, not our will. The Spirit intercedes according to the will of God. The story of Job in the Bible, I think, helps illustrate this. Job is a wealthy individual, has 7 kids, daughters-in-laws, grandkids, one of the richest people in all of the land. All this stuff is going on. Also declared to be the most faithful follower of God at the time. And he loses everything. His kids die, children die, loses everything. And he's defending God to his friends and to his wife before she dies. And finally, he's just destitute, and he cries out, where are you, God? You're not meeting me in my needs. And this famous passage from Job 38, verses 1 through 4, comes up. Then the Lord spoke to Job out of the storm. Out of the storm of Job's life, he said, who is this that obscures my plans with the words without knowledge? Brace yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me. Now listen to this, verse 4. It's going to be on the screen. Where were you when I laid the earth's foundations? Tell me if you understand. Verse 5, who marked off the dimensions? Surely you know. Who stretched a measuring line across it? Where were you? We want our plans, not his. God sees this whole picture and has things in his hands. He sees the pains and the struggles. I could only see what's in front of me, but God sees the universe and has it. And I've seen how God, this passage could be used, say, well, where are the miracles? I've seen people physically healed. I know people physically healed. Money and shared, and things happen. And God's power is glorified, but God's power is glorified when he meets his needs, and it's not necessarily that showy or that flashy when he heals us and brings us to completion. Verse 28, and we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose. Now, this is important. Many people misunderstand this verse a little bit. It's one of the most, I think, misquoted or misunderstood verses out there. What this verse is saying, what we think it says, is God's going to do things for our good. It's just for our good. You know, so if you're going through the struggle, God's going to heal that and make that for your good. Or your mom is sick, he's going to heal that and make it for your good. And when that doesn't happen, we go, well, there can't be a God. My mom didn't get healed, my grandmother passed away, I don't have enough food. We lose our faith. But what this verse is saying, and the way it was written in Greek, is that things work together for the good of God. And we have to think about this for a second. They work together for God's good. But if we really are God's beloved child, if it says, as it says, we're knitted together in our mother's womb, if we're made in the image of God and God's beloved child, it will work together for our good, but it's for what God wants, not what we want. And we have to realize that healing, life doesn't happen the way we want it together. We're called to trust him amidst the pain. Because if it's going to work together for God's good, we know somehow this is going to work out for our good. We should find assurance in that. I eventually became a Christian because of all of this. Realizing that God didn't cause my mother's illness, like I said. And in the midst of this, I had to make sense of a world that seemed to me was falling apart. And the only thing that made sense to this is that there was a God who had a bigger plan than what I could see. My brother, my younger brother, is not a Christian because his feeling is, if there's a good God, why did this happen? And I'm like, if there's a good God, there's a bigger plan. And as I associated and put myself around Christians, and I studied and I prayed, and I was supported in community, I could see the love of Christ welling up into me. I could see God being faithful to my life. Giving me what I really needed was a faith in him. That I had to break me so I could rely on him and eventually be with my mom when she passed away after 20 years. When she passed away of MS after being in the convalescent home 18 years, 20 years with the disease, we had the song sung, this duet sung at her funeral, I can only imagine. And, you know, the lines in there of, what will I do when I see you face to face? Will I bow or will I dance? I remember my mom always loving to dance, and I picture her dancing with Christ because of the faithfulness of God. The reason I'm standing here before you today as a pastor is because God used that for his good, and I'm not saying I'm a good pastor, but I'm here standing before you as one because of what he's done in my life. He turns something awful into something that becomes holy. Even when I was in a dark spot, I started experiencing the story that was unfolding of God's creation and how that he's reconciling everything to himself. Colossians 1 says this, 19 through 20, "For in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through him to reconcile himself to all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of his cross." Everything, my mom's disease, our sadness, our anger, our lack of food, our abuse, everything eventually is going to be made new in who Jesus Christ is when we trust this promise. He is faithful because of the blood of Christ that has ongoing ramifications for all eternity. God offers a better story and a better family than the world does. To experience this faithfulness of God and to rely on it, to be able to get through the tough times, I realized I had to do something. What I was doing was I was cultivating affection. One of the things I realized to be able to experience God's faithfulness for ourselves is that if we don't have affection, cultivate affection in our lives, we become lost and we're staying on the shifting ground. We become numb too often. We don't often see and experience God's faithfulness because our hearts are alive to things that don't matter and numb to those that do. Our loves are disordered. C.S. Lewis wrote, "We are too far easily pleased by lesser things." So we need to cultivate affection. That is the attitude we have of love. It is unhelpful to think that affection or attitudes can't be changed or think this happens instantaneously. In fact, cultivating affection such as love stems from a strategy of battling to live in God's faithfulness. It is through growing that we really determine and understand what is important in life and that God does meet our needs. So one, what do? Refuse to remove yourself from the presence of God and the things he cherishes. You know, they say absence makes the heart grow fonder, maybe for a short time, but in reality, if you're married and the husband doesn't show affection to his wife, just starts leaving and ignoring her, what's going to happen? The affection is not going to be there. But we do that with God. There's a struggle in our life. Something happens, and we pull ourselves away from God, and we start growing away from him. There's fallout. We start neglecting God. And absence does not make the heart grow fonder, because we feel guilty and we feel shame that we can't go back to it. We must resolve to not allow a day go by without deliberately putting ourselves in the presence of God. Refuse to be absent. Two, to cultivate affection. Receive regular reminders of God's love for you. When I talk to couples who've been married 40, 50, 60 years, they say it's not always the big things in their marriage that keeps them together. It is the small things. It's the holding of the hand. It's the note. It's doing the sort of unexpected. Because everyone has this desire to be loved and to know that they're loved. And this is also true about knowing and believing that God is faithful in our lives. That he is here in the tough times as well as the good. Regularly receive reminders of God's love. Author Brennan Manning wrote this: "The recovery of passion begins with the recovery of my true self as the beloved. The recovery of passion begins with the recovery of my true self as the beloved." When we sing, when we watch, what we listen to, what we read, when we celebrate God's goodness, that reminds us that we're God's beloved. What goes in affects who we are. We must build reminders into our daily lives, beginning with the meditation on God's word, to receive regular reminders of God's love. Three, reflect on how your daily rituals are shaping your affections. We all have daily rituals. When we think about it, and this is how we order our lives, and it shows what we believe in. When you go for that Starbucks all the time at a certain time of the day, when you are reaching for the phone at the certain times of the day, when you fall asleep to Netflix, all these things, when you go to the amusement park all the time, what is this being trained to show in your desires? Your desires for the instantaneous, for this idea of, I want this now. And they're not of God. And we wonder where God is. It's because we've trained ourselves in our daily rituals. So every day or weekly or monthly, take a look at what are the rituals in your life that are taking you away from God, from spending time with him? What are the routines that you say shows that you value a good life? Four, and final, reflect on where God has been faithful in your life. Too often, we forget that God has been faithful in our lives. But What we do is we act like ancient Israel. Ancient Israel was in slavery for 400 years. God frees them, provides food for them, delivers them from their masters, and they're free. And what do they say? God, now what's next? What have you done for me lately? When I look back on my life, I can see points in my life where God has been faithful. Just not with my mom. Places to live, cars, health, and it goes on. But also just not those big things that I could write those down, but also when I've been low. People have come into my life to bring me up. When I've lacked faith, people have been there to pray for me and to raise me up. Take time to write down where you can look back on your life and see God that has been in your life. When you seek out affection, when you grow affection, you can see God's true faithfulness in your life. That he's always there. And he wants to care for us and to lift us up. That the world is a cold and dark place that doesn't have answers. But when we rely on God for our needs, it grows our faith and makes us stronger. But we have to realize it's not in my time, it's in his time. It's not the way I necessarily want to be healed. It's in his time, in his place. Because he has this plan of love and compassion. I mean, he came to us, sent his son to live and die. That is the biggest need that we had. He's conquered death, freeing us from this grasp of fear that we have. That's what the world needs. We can't do it on our own. We try and try and try and fail. But when we rely on Christ and cultivate that affection, we realize that love changes, that we could go out into the world and that we could change the world through who Jesus Christ is, not through our own power, but because Christ meets us in our needs. Because he's done all the work for us. In a moment, we're gonna have Holy Communion here, where Christ, we realize, is truly present in the wine and the bread here, and he rescues us, and meets us our needs for salvation and for healing in the midst of our lives. What I'd like you to do is take a moment. I'm asking you to close your eyes. I just want you to start this process of reflecting, where do you need God to be faithful in your life? Where do you need him to show up in your life? Where do you need that? Where have you seen that in your life? And prepare your hearts to receive forgiveness and renewal through communion. Because just like my mom was healed, that's the healing that Christ ultimately offers us, is through that. So let's take a moment, let's calm ourselves, and reflect on this.